The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course the DraftKings Network. Gil Alexander, it's Kalei Bidelon, producer number 9. So much more than a producer. We're live from Bar Canada here at the D. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. How are we doing?
Doing very well. How many people call you Kalei Bidelon?
Not very many, no.
Oh, really? Oh,
no, I thought, that is not a common, pronunciation.
I thought you said they said it all the time that they called you Bidelon.
Bidelon.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I was just messing with
Kelly, they usually get right. Yeah, barely.
Yeah. Coming up.
Bidelon, way too many. way too many phone calls. Hi, Miss Bidelon. How are you?
Coming up on the show, Peter Futek will join us to talk all things Washington, Michigan from last night and look ahead to next year's national championship, who he might put his money behind, who he might put his money behind for the number one pick in the draft. And I, of course, will ask the question of Pete that I am unaware of the answer to, which is when does Michigan play Florida State? Is that next Monday? I'm curious when that happens. I'll get that answer from Pete later. We'll also talk to Drew Dinsick about wild card weekend in the National Football League. And Kelly and I have our playoff power rankings, 1 through 14, correct?
Playoff power rankings. Yeah, we went the full 14. It was a good idea by you. We were just going to do our normal 10, and then you're like, 10 or 14? I was like, yeah, it's a pretty good idea,
good,
I guess.
Good
we're,
idea,
we're down to limited 14.
But the idea was 10 or 14. That was the extent of it. We'll talk college hoops with the three-man weave crew as well a little later on. A couple big college basketball games tonight involving the number 1 and 2 teams in the nation. But first, how about that national championship game last night? Michigan 34, Washington 13. Kelly, what is the opposite of a classic? Because that's what this was.
Yeah, you know what? I said that like right away, but it kind of turned into a game.
Well, it's if you in-game bet every single college bowl game, like I don't know,
yeah,
I did.
Yeah.
One of the things I kept saying was, a lot of these games are three games in one. This was that.
Yes, it was.
This was that in the national championship. And it started out, by the way, congratulations to everybody in Michigan Nation, a Michigan alum, my buddy Juan in D.C., my buddy Rich in D.C. When I grew up, a lot of kids went to Michigan for some reason.
Okay.
From that area of the country. I'm not sure what the historical reason was for that, but they all flew to Houston. They had the time of their lives. So Congratulations to everybody who went to Michigan, who backed Michigan betting-wise yesterday. Good for you. The Wolverines get it done 34-13. First drive of the game, 8 plays, 84 yards. Donovan Edwards in from 41, sort of bounced into the line and then bounced off to pay dirt untouched. 7-0 Michigan, less than 5 minutes in. Washington did it. At that point, you're sort of like, okay, well, let's see what Penix can do before we get too crazy with this. Washington matriculated. They got it to first and goal. It was two really strange play calls, I thought, on first and second down. And left it to third down. Didn't get there. Grady Gross just got in a 25-yard field goal to cut it to 7-3. Michigan then 4 plays, 86 yards. Edwards in from 46 on the 2nd and 14 play. 14-3 Michigan. 2:23 left in the first quarter. And then after a UW 3-and-out, Blake Corum goes 59 yards, and that's when the first quarter ended. Michigan had 174 yards rushing in the first quarter, and we're up 14-3. And after that Corum run, when you went to the break, you're like, oh my God, this game is going to be horrific.
Yes. That is the time, right? Yeah, when you were like, okay, well, this is a dud. I was out at a bar, and I'm like, well, I'm gonna hang out here longer. There's no reason to rush home and watch this game.
You were out at a bar?
I know, shocking.
What an upset that was. And then you come back from the commercial into the second quarter, and Washington does hold. They hold Michigan to a James Turner 32-yard field goal. So Michigan goes up 17-3 early second quarter, and that's where sort of the parade of moments happens. First, Washington gets it to 4th and 7. They're down 14 now at the Michigan 47. They decide to go for it, and Penix overshoots a wide-open Roma Dunze. And I think every human being in the country had the same thoughts, which is, wow, Penix doesn't ever miss that pass. And boy,
that was shocking.
If we wanted a competitive night of football, we kind of needed that.
Yeah.
That was the thought at the moment. But then Michigan 3-and-out, Washington 3-and-out. Michigan then had a 4th and 3 at the Washington 39. Remember this, they're up 14. They showed punt. Then they called timeout, and Harbaugh decided, yeah, on second thought, let's go for it. They fail, incomplete pass from J.J. McCarthy. And then Washington did matriculate. And this was Washington's best moment of the game. They go 11 plays, 61 yards in 4 minutes and a second. And beautifully played it in the red zone. I thought DeBoer was wonderful here because Michigan used their last time out. Harbaugh obviously trying to keep time for his offense there in the second, in the late stages of the second quarter. And on third down, I was screaming this at the TV, and Kalen DeBoer did this. They ran Penix third and goal at the five. They ran the football to bleed the clock, no matter the result of that third down play, and he got 2 yards. That was the proper game management play. And then if you get it on fourth down, you've got a double dip opportunity, which is exactly what they did on fourth. Penix to McMillan, touchdown, 17-10 Michigan with just 42 seconds left in the second quarter. Michigan couldn't do anything with it in that short time. And so Washington with a chance to double dip and tie the game once the second half resumed. By the way, first half stats, Michigan 290 total yards to 160 for Washington, 209 of them on the ground. But then the first play of the third quarter, Penix, in just a bad decision, there's no other way to say it, bad pass, where he sort of kind of was throwing it away, kind of wasn't, picked by Will Johnson. Penix also got stepped on. He had to limp off, which is another thing about Penix here, too, which is the image of him is twofold. It's him throwing dimes. I know it wasn't last night that he did, but generally throwing dimes and also being hurt all the time. You sort of can't shake that when you project ahead, as unfair as that may be to some, when you project ahead to the draft. Michigan then three and out, though. There's a lot of three and outs here. Turner does get a field goal off that interception to make it 20-10. They traded field goals because Gross got one for Washington right after that to cut it to seven again. And then this is with more than half the third quarter left. So it's 20-13. And from there, this was just a fest of opportunities for Washington, where you're like, Michigan is trying to give this game to Washington. Here, take it. Take it from us. And Washington refused
to. And I don't know what your positions were in game. I actually, because I did the same thing. I
was pre-flop Washington. I lost both of my pre-flops.
I went in and grabbed, so it was that fourth down stop in the second quarter. I grabbed Washington plus 13.5, and then in the third quarter, bought back on a Michigan minus 5.5.
Yeah.
And I'm like, for a while in that third quarter, I'm like, well, this might actually work out beautifully. Yeah, this might work out.
But it was from 20-13, from that point when Washington kicked the field goal to cut it to seven. Michigan three and out, Washington punt. Michigan punt, Washington punt. Michigan three and out, Washington three and out. It's like opportunity after opportunity. And in that last three and out, that was the one where it was the big questionable holding call on Roger Rosengarten, number 73 of UW. No relation to the great Jason Weingarten, by the way. No
Rosengarten.
And this is what sort of set Twitter off, because it was a ticky-tack hold, if it even was a hold at all. It would have put Washington really on the cusp of tying this game. And it came after a series of Michigan holds that were never called. So the UW Twitter group, and I don't mean to diminish it at all, because it is legit that, yes, the officiating did seem to go one way in terms of holds and that were called and were not. But Washington just had so many opportunities. It certainly wasn't the defining factor of the game. And then Michigan does say, okay, we've given you a million opportunities. That's it. Five plays, 71 yards. Corum in from 12, 27-13. Then Washington, 4th-and-13 at the Michigan 30. Penix picked by Michael Sainristil. He returns at 81 yards. That leads to a Corum touchdown in from 1. 34-13, your final. And that's how it goes down in a game that wasn't quite that big of a blowout, except for that it was at the beginning and the end, if that makes sense.
Right. That's exactly, like you said, it was three games, or maybe two games. It was just Michigan good at the beginning and end, and in the middle is a little muddied.
And so Michigan, with their first national title since they had a co-national title in 1997, their first sole national title since 1948.
I don't know if I knew all that going into yesterday's game. I was like, man, Michigan hasn't won in a while.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
That's a sore spot for Michigan fans.
No, that's why my buddies flew to Houston from all over the country where they live now as adults, because, you know, Michigan is a football school. And besides the co-national championship in 97, they could never get to the promised land. In fact, won an NCAA tournament, won a basketball championship in 89 when Glenn Rice, every shot he he took hit the bottom of the net in the tournament. So the irony of winning a basketball title but never being able to get at Romeo Robinson, right. People remember. But people over Seton Hall, but people, the notion that they couldn't ever win a title besides that co-title in 97 has gnawed at their entire lives, at them for their entire lives. And so they all flew to Houston. Good on them.
Yeah.
It's glad it worked out for everybody.
Wyatt Tomchek, an important part of this show, a big Michigan man himself.
Yes. Congratulations
to
Wyatt.
This morning.
He didn't need to come to work?
No, he made it into work this morning. I was a little worried about that.
National championship for next year. Georgia's your short shot at plus 450. It's the usual suspects. Alabama, 6-1. Ohio State, 8-1. Texas, 9-1. These Wolverines who... we're going to assume is without Jim Harbaugh. You never want to assume, Kelly. You know what they say about assuming. You regret something you said earlier. It's all the usual suspects at the top. But remember, college football will be very different next year. It will be completely different, not the least of which is a 12-team playoff at the end. But you have the massive Big Ten SEC conglomerate now at this point. And so you just wonder who will make those 12. The schedules are much more difficult for some of the blue bloods. You got to imagine that teams with two and even three losses will get into the 12-team tournament. So that's going to be interesting to talk to Futak about that. Does that make it easier for a stray Big 12 team to get in there, for instance?
Yeah.
Texas being the shortest shot of the old Big 12 teams at 9-1. But is there a stray Big 12 team longer than that, you know, that could get there? So it's going to be fascinating. We'll talk to Futak about that later. Drew joins us next, though. Drew Dinsick talks some NFL.
Party up, Ann Arbor.
There you go, Ann Arbor. Wild Card Weekend next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Kelly, one thing's for sure. Oh, I love the Wildcat. Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN daily newsletter. In today's newsletter, plenty to go around from Bill Ady and company, including deep analysis from the JVTs and the Zach Cohens of the world. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox, absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe.
All your NFL win totals graded in there today.
Graded.
You can check all that out in the daily newsletter. I'm trying to be more like Bill Ady myself, popping that collar.
Popping that collar? Yeah. Does he go pop collar all the time? Or no, is that just
really
for the graphics?
So. I don't know, but like the graphic's so good, it's making me believe he does. Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't look different on him, I guess. This man pops his collar all the time. See that segue right there? He is the co-host of the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with his buddy Andy Molitor, sometimes sober. And also, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge is Drew Dinsick at whale_capper. How you doing, Drew?
I'm well, man. Best time of year, Gil. Australian Open draw this week.
Let's go.
NFL playoffs. NBA is cooking. Everything is going swell right now.
Are you betting any Adelaide?
I have a little Jack Draper outright. How about you?
Oh, I was resuming. It was a reminder from tennis yesterday of how these things work. I was on my way to a 2-0. I had Bolt, the Australian. He coasted to victory over Seaboth Wild. But then I had Tatiana Maria, the German player, and she was playing, Podoroska. And she's up 6-1, 4-3, and then Podoroska takes her toys and goes home.
Oh, no.
Two games before it ends. Yeah, it was just this reminder. It was like, tennis, we're here. We're back again to screw you out of a win. Always check your books and how they grade those kinds of tennis outcomes. Yes. So you and I are doing a Australian Open podcast on Friday post draw to talk about tennis's first major. I'm pumped. Hardos enjoy. Can't wait for Friday.
Yes. I talked to our friends at Pinnacle this morning, got the juices flowing pre-draw. So I got all my thoughts organized. I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
Okay. Do you want to share one thought here? Would you like to save it for Friday? What do you want to do?
I mean, I did my numbers and I guess, we made jokes about Wimbledon being a wake me up when we get to the final when the Wimbledon starts between Djokovic and Alcaraz. I think definitely this is more of a four horse race, albeit, you know, you have to have a bit of a discount on win probability for Medvedev and Sinner because he's never done it. Medvedev because he's not as good, but I think Djokovic's wrist injury is being a little undercovered. I think it's being a little underpriced by market. I thought his performance against Alex Demon Hour was pretty concerning. And I think Djokovic is kind of, I mean, he's won this tennis 10 times. And I know this may sound insane. He won Paris, he won tour finals, like he's on a roll. But I think no is the right bet for Djokovic on the men's side. And then the women's side, you know, typically it's rare to have like a concentrated top of the women's field. I feel like it's, you know, it's so many slams we've started about the women's side of the podcast, like, man, how many could win? 20, 25?
Yeah,
this is, feels like 3. And I mean, Coco, if you want to include 4, sure, but it's super top heavy for me by the numbers on the women's side. And you know, the reason is pretty clear. Like right now, Iga, Sabalenka, and Rybakina are all very, very close to their peak rating ever. Like they're all at the top, you know, peak of their powers. So any of those women kind of, you know, being surprised in the early stages is kind of low probability. And then like the middle class right now seems to have taken a meaningful step backwards. So I think you're looking at a pretty top heavy men's and women's. And I think I'm going to be going against the favorite on the men's, and assuming Rybakina lands in the bottom half of the draw, I'm going to be going with the favorite on the women's.
Yes. Yes. Meaning Iga Swiatek is what I'm hearing.
That is, yes, that is correct.
By the way, I want to send a shout out, by the way. So Drew and I will do a much deeper dive on this, not to take his podcast title, but we'll do this on Friday, Australian Open, on the Beating the Book podcast. And I want to send a shout out to our buddy Dan Weston, who has been a frequent guest of this show. He just went through open heart surgery. He is doing well. But Dan has been through it. So I just want to send him a shout out for those who have followed our tennis for many, many years. I was texting with him the other day, so he's in good spirits. Okay, last night, college football, we'll get to your wild card picks here momentarily. But the big sort of, no one likes a draft as much as you do, Drew Dinsick. I know that about you. And the one thing, the one big sort of takeaway, and you don't want to color a career with one game ever, but Penix was not particularly great last night. It wasn't his best foot forward. J.J. McCarthy was already a guy that, you know, few thought would be at the top of the draft. You hear it every once in a while, but he certainly didn't do anything spectacular last night. Had the one good run. So we have Caleb Williams at -800 to be the first pick in the draft over at DraftKings. We have Drake May out of North Carolina at 5-1, and Jaden Daniels is 10-1. The first non-quarterback is Marvin Harrison Jr. at 15-1. Then you see Penix at 40-1. By the way, McCarthy, the aforementioned, is at 100-1. Do you have any thoughts this early on the NFL draft, either on the first pick or beyond?
I mean, until we know who's making the first pick and what their motivations are, it's tough to say that anyone should be -800. That said, it's fair to have Caleb Williams as a healthy favorite there. I guess if I was playing with some fun money, probably take a shot at Marvin Harrison Jr. 15-1, just in case the deal doesn't get done, and in case Justin Fields manages to win the hearts and minds over at Hallis Hall.
maybe
they just stick with the first overall pick and take a guy who's the most likely, I think, non quarterback that is future potential All Pro is pretty clearly Marvin Harrison Jr. So, that's not a crazy price, because there's been rumors in circulating from your Commanders what package that they were potentially offering to flip up to go get number one sounded absurd when you said it out loud, and I don't know if ultimately the Bears are going to be able to get that type of haul now for the first overall pick again. It remains to be seen if they really are intending to move on from Fields or not. It's all eyes on Chicago.
Commodores would be insane to trade a package up to number one from two, because again, they should have the attitude of whoever you take at one, we'll take it two. If it's Caleb versus Drake or Jaden, whoever they have in their minds, it's such an inexact science. Like, why would you even consider moving up the one spot? You'd have to be so sure that your guy was that much better than the next guy. Now, someone else from deeper down in the draft, that's a different story. But Washington from two? That's not going to happen, is it? Tell me no. Please tell me no.
I would expect no. And honestly, the fact, like, it was a weird, those reports that were circulated were kind of funky because, like, Washington's, they're doing a much broader rehaul of the whole organization. So the idea that they're already kind of putting together trade package offers seems a little suspect to me, but but that said, I've definitely, you know, the Washington football franchise has done stupider things. Oh, so
you've heard, you've heard of these guys. I wasn't sure you were aware. All right. Wildcard weekend, 2 games on Saturday, 3 on Sunday, 1 on Monday. Let's do these chronologically. Just get your thoughts. The first being the Browns and the Texans. Since the 5-4 game in the old historical Houston Texans time slot, as we like to call it on Saturday wildcard weekend. What do you have on this game? Did you make a bet? Do you have any thoughts on Cleveland and Houston?
Yeah, you know what was funny? Did some media, did some postulating on Sunday and in the immediate aftermath of these games, and did some media yesterday talking about the wild card round. And my sentiment was, probably gonna be a light week for me. And then I finished updating my numbers with expected players availability for these games, and I'm all over the board. So it took 0.0 time for me to convince myself that there are meaningful edges in wildcard weekend, and I have 2 bets in this game, and I honestly don't even know which one I like better because they're both about the same in terms of magnitude. Texans money line and under I think are both very, very favorable prices in this contest. The Cleveland, I haven't thought through exactly why I think both of these are so strong, other than just my numbers say that these are both mispriced. But 44 for a total, to me is it's pretty aggressive, considering, you know, the skill position of players that are available for Houston combined with, you know, the offensive line injuries for Cleveland. I'm expecting that you're going to be, looking a little bit more at, a Cleveland attack that tries to emulate what we saw from Indianapolis last week, where it was a lot of run heavy, just in general, leaning on the ground game. Now Cleveland doesn't have any runners who are even in the conversation of talent with, Jonathan Taylor, but that said, they should find some success on the ground, which could shorten the game. Houston has a propensity to call minus EV sequencing of plays and really leaning into the run game when it doesn't work. So this game could get real short real quick. So I think under 44 is my favorite look, but I would make Texans a small favorite in that one.
Let me, we'll get back to why you go Texans money line here on the other side and get to the other 5 games as well. Wild card weekend with Drew Dinsick, Whale_Capper. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Bar Canada at the D, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. No time to lose, no promo. We got to talk to Drew Dinsick about all these wild card weekend games. You gave a speech as to why, not a speech, but you told us why you like the under. Why do you like Houston on the money line here against Cleveland?
Better quarterback. CJ Stroud is, he's for real. I don't really know any other way to parse it. I think the fact that he was in basically a playoff setting, most important game of his young career on the road, and he performed at that level was, it was all I needed to see. I think ultimately him finding a way to get, get hard yards against a Cleveland defense that I have a ton of respect for, but ultimately, you know, on the road is not quite as effective in terms of pass rush is kind of where it boils down to me that Houston's going to be able to find a way here. I think this is just going to be a slog of a game and Houston wins, with sort of, end of game efficiency and last minute type of field goal is sort of the expectation. But Houston, I do think with, you know, at home, you know, healthy ish offensive line, and expecting some of their skill position players back, really, like if this is Nico Collins and, you know, it on his own again, particularly if he, you know, is sustained any additional injuries in that Indy game, then I'm feeling not so great about my Houston bet. But I'm assuming Noah Brown or Robert Woods or both will be available. And that matters because you really have just one sort of standout cornerback for the Browns and Denzel Ward. And I think you can beat some of these other guys and, you know, Juan Thornhill, Greg Newsom dealing with some injuries. I think ultimately that secondary can be, can be capitalized on. So, I'm happy everybody's so excited about Joe Flacco's amazing kind of return to the scene, but he's still Joe Flacco at age 30, whatever. And I don't think realistically that's going to be enough to get a road win against the Texans team that's playing pretty good football right now.
We have said on this show more than once, braced for a stinker at some point from Flacco. Braced for a stinker. I don't know if it's this week, but it's coming. Okay. And then again, in fairness, then I have to add, but in 2012, it never came. So I'll say that.
That's a good point.
Miami at Kansas City. This is, you and I were talking off air here. This is the one dog you don't like.
Yeah, I make this one outside of three by a decent amount for Kansas City. I didn't lay three. I put Kansas City money line in a couple round robin parlays. But the Miami defense right here, I have rated as the worst defense in the actually, let's take that back. The Eagles I have lower than Miami, amazingly. But Miami, which at times in the last half of the season, you could have made a case they were one of the better defenses in the NFL. The loss of, and I mean, you know, in no particular order, Jalen Phillips, Jerome Baker, Andrew Van Ginkle, Xavier Howard. I'm sure I'm forgetting some people. The fact that you're basically down to Christian Wilkins and Jalen Ramsey, and there are as many holes as there are. Oh, Chubb gone. Like, you know, this has gotten to the point where you are basically playing with an entire second unit. I don't know that they have the personnel to do what Vic Fangio wants to do from a scheme standpoint. And I really don't have any issues at all going to war with Pat Mahomes in Kansas City, even in the cold weather. And even with the, you know, the lack of chemistry with the wide receiving core, you know, I think in general, Kansas City is probably the team that stands out the most obviously to me among the playoff teams that could get upgraded meaningfully by market just based on putting together a couple of solid performances. People have kind of quit on their defense being elite, but if you remove turnovers, they're still top five in terms of EPA per play over the second half of the season. So Kansas City kind of checks every box for me as a realistic contender. And I think ultimately that they get a pretty comfortable win against Miami.
All right, biggest spread on the board Sunday morning. Bills, 10-point favorites at home against the Steelers in the 2-7 in the AFC.
Yeah, so this one is a misprice from what I can tell you. I took the 10. I know the market's been kind of fighting over this one. I saw 9 at one point at Circa yesterday. It's back up to 10, so somebody pretty clearly thinks Buffalo is the right side here. But I don't have a huge gap between these two teams right now. In fact, I'm kind of surprised to be even saying this out loud, but like Pittsburgh's offense is grading somewhat well and actually matches up well against Buffalo. I kind of can't even believe this, but I might actually take Pittsburgh money line in this one. Buffalo defense is clearly improved from the lows that we saw earlier this year. They can still be run on. I mean, you saw that in the first half against Miami. Like, there's ways to take advantage of this unit, particularly if you can get outside the tackles. That's where Pittsburgh wants to work. So it's kind of interesting to conceive of Mason Rudolph and company. You know, yes, he's been living on kind of low, I doubt that these are repeatable over the long
unsustainable.
Term. Unsustainable kind of explosive passing plays, but he's certainly playing a lot better quarterback than we saw any time this season from Kenny Pickett, and definitely a huge upgrade over Mitch Trubisky. So I actually have Pittsburgh's offense on a neutral. If this was like a completely neutral game with no weather, I would have Pittsburgh's offense rated very similar to Buffalo's in this contest. I have Buffalo's defense better than Pittsburgh's, particularly in the absence of JJ Watt. That's maybe the one thing that I think is tough to really truly kind of wrap price around in this one, because I am not expecting Watt to go. Pittsburgh is, I think, like the conditions and the strength of their offense against what Buffalo is doing right now defensively is enough to keep them in this game. Ultimately expect this one to be relatively close. And if you're getting 10 points, I think you have to take the dog.
All right, let's try to do a minute on each of these. Then it's the Packers, 7.5-point dogs at Dallas.
Yeah, I have this one as extremely competitive. I'm blown away that you're getting 7.5 points here with Green Bay. I played a little bit of Green Bay. I played a little bit of Green Bay money line. I think the total there is perfectly fair. I make it 50. But I honestly don't know that I have a strong opinion one way or the other who will win, which means Green Bay with the at prices is the obvious bet.
Wow, these are I'm amazed by these. I have a lot to say, but I'm going to wait till you're gone, and then I can talk about you after you're gone, Drew. What about the Lions and the Rams? This is, well, it's not the most tightly lined game, but it's fairly tight. Obviously, the most tightly lined game on Sunday anyway.
Yeah, fingers crossed the Rams find a way to win here. I was expecting to run numbers and be like, yeah, Rams, they should be favored. But no, I think it's fine that the Lions are favored. I think this total is obscenely high. And I think ultimately we have a game that's going to be contested by field goals decided towards the end. I have a lot of Rams future in pocket for NFC at some like wild prices. So very, very hopeful the Rams find a way. But, you know, I think people are kind of looking at this like it's going to be some sort of track meet. And I think both teams with the lead or, you know, playing score and answer, you know, will have an ability to get the ball moving on the ground, which could shorten this one. So I don't think we're going to get into the 50s here. And I like under the best out of any bet.
But no play on the side under 51.5.
I have some Rams. I'd round robined money line on all the dogs in KC.
Okay.
So I have some Rams money line and round robins, and I have some outstanding futures on Rams that I'm very hopeful make it to the next round.
All right. So then you just you let us know then what's happening Monday night. You're on Tampa here as the dog against Philly.
Yeah, I initially thought this was a good underlook because of the weather and because of the injury situation with the quarterbacks, but my numbers say this should actually be over. So I bought out of my under stake. And I think Tampa Bay should be a small favorite. This is largely because I make Philly's defense the worst unit of any offense or defense in the playoffs as currently rostered. And I know they're going to get Slay back. I know that Blankenship may come back. I know that they may have some wrinkles that ultimately help kind of save their season. But, you know, if I needed one little push in the right direction, the fact that Matt Patricia is now your DC is enough for me to believe that this defense is not going to be able to get Baker Mayfield off the field, even though Baker Mayfield did not look good at all against Carolina. I think maybe a week and a day to get right. And this is a little bit more of a competitive effort from the Tampa offense. Philly offense I have as the best unit in this game by a margin, but I do have them as susceptible to the strength of the Tampa Bay defense and in general, the scheme of the Tampa Bay defense, which relies pretty heavily on the blitz, has not been a recipe for success for Jalen Hurts this year. Combine that with the fact that Hurts is thrown to AJ Brown, who's hurt, Devontae Smith, probably not going. So you're kind of left with, you know, a relatively light cupboard in terms of skill position players to make plays. So ultimately, I think that one's going to be a coin flip of a game. And you're giving me the home team at plus money. I'll take them.
Wow. It's really true. Like the Philly defense was bad. And then they're like, here, take it, Matt Patricia. And it got even worse for sure. So all the dogs, weird how that happened. All the dogs, except for the injury depleted Dolphins. That's the Drew Dinsick take on Wild Card Weekend. My goodness. All right, man. A lot of money lines sprinkled in there. A lot to think about. Appreciate it, Drew. I'll talk to you Friday for the Australian Open pod.
All right. Best of luck, man.
My man, Drew Dinsick from Long Beach. Cool kids call it the LBC. Kelly, I don't know if you know about that.
I did. Yes, I did, because I'm cool. Cool, Gil.
Speaking of cool, how about that box at the game last night with Jeter and Jordan and
I had to
Travis
text you to
Scott.
Confirm I was seeing everybody correctly.
What was Stephen A. doing there? Just to round out the cool credit. Amazing. We'll come back. We'll talk some college hoops. Matty Cox from Three Man Weave next.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL playoffs, bringing you an offer that'll help make the playoffs electrifying. New customers can bet $5 on any game and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VEGAS. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code VEGAS. The crown is yours. Gil Alexander, we get tweets at Beating the Book. Didn't read any tweets yet today. Larry Fresh. Think that's his real name, Larry Fresh?
Absolutely.
So excited for the Australian Open. Since you got me into betting tennis, can I call you my masuga or whatever you call Chris Andrews. Oh, my mishpucha, I think is what you're looking for.
That's what he's looking for.
Sure, you can call me that. Mr. Masterline, new drinking game, shot when Gil says matriculate. Oh, that's been done before. Did I say matriculate today? Did I?
I don't know. I didn't catch it.
I don't know if I did.
See it off and good luck with that drinking game.
Yeah, really. That, of course, is a tribute, by the way, for those who want it, because we've gotten tweets before like, you're not using matriculate properly. That is a tribute to the old NFL Films Super Bowl IV footage of the Kansas City Chiefs, the eventual Super Bowl champion that week, that year, the eventual champs, Hank Stram, their head coach, yelling at his team to just keep matriculating the ball down the field. So, if I use it improperly,
we've gotten to the point though that it should really be like a dictionary, like third definition.
It really should,
just because like we all say it. Everybody says it when they talk about football.
Just keep matriculating the ball down the field, boys. That's what he said. Steve, this is from New York F Ball Giants 42. Have you seen any odds for Coach of the Year or Defensive Rookie of the Year? Last I saw, Coach Stefanski and Ryan's at even odds, but that was before the Jags lost to give Houston the division. I don't see any awards anymore. Done. Regular season off the board. Correct, Kelly?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything anywhere.
Jamie Leva. Let's see. Oh, he's all over the place. I don't even know where you're going with that one, Jamie. I apologize. Trust the glove. Does Coco have some meaningful betting momentum going into the Australian? Any suggestions? Well, I'm all over the place with Iga, but as Drew just mentioned, Coco is the big three right now. If you want to expand it past Iga, who's the number one player in the world, is Iga Świątek, Elena Rybakina, and Aryna Sabalenka. And Rybakina just crushed Sabalenka. We had her as a dog. All the picks at VSiN.com/picks. But Coco would be number four, and she sort of got over the Iga mental hurdle last year. So listen, she is always live. Let's put it that way. There is a possibility that it could go her way. New Jersey, New York at GV. He says, as a Seton Hall fan who went to Ohio State, I just want to thank you for mentioning that 1989 final this morning, the Romeo Robinson one. Pardon me. Sorry for doing that. Trip Tepper until last night's win to get the outright national title. Michigan's football resume in the modern era since 1978 was basically on par with that of BYU. For decades, Michigan has strutted around like they had Alabama's resume of titles. Can they have their moment, Trip Tepper? Just allow them to be happy for a second.
That makes me laugh, but yeah, I'm with you. Let's let them have a moment.
Yeah, and then Larry Fresh also cracking up about the Wildcat comment. Wildcat comment earlier. I could read more tweets, and I will, but this gentleman needs to be addressed. He is, of course, one of the three gentlemen from Three Man Weave. You can follow all their picks at 3MW_CBB. He is the great Matty Cox. How you doing, Matt?
Gil, fantastic. Pleasure to be back joining you fine gentlemen at the official launch of college basketball into the public stratosphere. Good times.
The official launch. Once the national championship game clears, this is the official hard launch is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yes, yes. And actually, once the initial SWAC games conclude last night, too. So once those two things finish, then I think we're officially off and running.
I see.
Basketball.
And I asked you this on the break, and I'll ask it again on air, which is, how much of the football national championship do you, so immersed in college basketball, actually watch?
Ashamed to say, I only watched about a half last night. I felt like I was obligated to watch as a sports fan and professional better. Like it would just be a miss if I didn't. And I'd be just failing in water cooler conversations for the next month or so, whatever. But no, yeah, I mean, there's too many games today, too many games tomorrow. and now the slates are just like, I mean, 154 on Saturday. That's just too many games. So college basketball is just a lot. It is. It really is.
Did you see Greg Peterson had like a 6-hour podcast or something like that with all the games?
He probably ran
That's
for
not
20
surprising.
Miles too.
Greg is he is the beacon for all of us who he's just unfazed by the grind.
Unfazed. It's
really robotic, I'd say.
Unfazed by the grind. All right, let me ask you what I asked Jim Root last week. I'll ask you because we do a lot of in-game college basketball betting. And when I say we, because it's different people, right? Wishnev does it. I have a buddy in DC who does it. And it's fascinating to observe their different approaches. But what I have observed in past years is that things change once conference season starts. Does your handicapping change from a pre-flop perspective?
Yeah, massively. I'm actually kind of in the dark on how I would change from an in-game perspective, but I definitely think that there are, from a pre-flop, I think it has to. And I think for both sides and totals, you have to kind of reassess, you know, how what teams may have been overinflated or under priced due to who they played and when they played them and the circumstances of when they played those games all throughout non-conference, especially because you have so many weird kind of parts of the season. The seasonality is such a big part of college basketball handicapping. Like the feast week MTEs are always a crapshoot, in my opinion. The week after Christmas seems like a crapshoot. So those are games or areas I try to bet less in general. So you kind of have to sift through all the weeds and cut through the noise. And I think you have to really pick out what mattered to kind of find out where your starting power rating kicks off for conference play, which is it's a pretty big part of the edge. I think, you know, early in conference play, you can have good numerical edges. I think later in the conference season, you have more, you know, situational spot trending type edges. So you kind of have to toe that tightrope as the year goes on.
Yeah. By the way, I you're right. Like, it shouldn't matter to in-game, but somehow it does. And I haven't been able to really wrap my arms around exactly why, but it does, just based on the methods used. Let's talk about tonight. We have a couple huge games at the top of the rankings involving a couple teams at the top. Houston, number two team in the country, undefeated Cougars, are at Iowa State. Houston is a small favorite here. What do you like? Anything?
I was tempted to take Iowa State at the opener, and how it's come all the way down to two, and I'm almost looking at Houston if it keeps going. Iowa State, awesome home team, great defensively. They're awesome at winning the possession war, rebounding, turnover battle, two things that Houston's been like the absolute, you know, star of college basketball the last few years under Kelvin Sampson. However, Iowa State has not really played well against big time competition. They're one of those teams I think that's really risen up the rankings because they've beaten bad teams by margin. I did want to lay Houston now at the current price. I think it's been over bet, but Houston did look mortal in their only true road hostile game at Xavier, a team that's not very good, in my opinion. So I stayed away.
And then what about Purdue? Number one team in the country. They're at Nebraska. Nebraska is also having a good season. They're 12-3. Purdue Boilermakers favored by a touchdown and a hook here. 7.5 on the road.
Yeah, Nebraska gave him fit last year with Fred Hoiberg kind of revamping how he plays. They're not playing as frenetically fast. They kind of have a more sturdy interior presence. Last year it was Derek Walker. This year it's Rick Mast, the Bradley transfer. I think it's built to defend Purdue better. And I think this is a great home dog Big Ten spot where you want to back the home team. I stayed away, though, ultimately, because I've heard there's some pretty some lingering cumulative injuries for Nebraska. I think Mast is hurt with a calf deal. Their lead guard, Bryce Williams, is a game time decision tonight. And then CJ Wilcher, another role player, is going to be on the mend as well. So I don't like backing a brittle team against Purdue, right? Purdue, I think, is somewhat not a fade in Big Ten play, but I think you can bet against them in the right spots. But when you have a team that's a little bit banged up, not a good spot to do it. So I didn't do it.
You feel like a Purdue believer, Matty. I'm not gonna lie to you. You feel like you are.
I like Purdue. I think in March people will over discount them because of the recent tournament woes. I think this team's built a little different. However, in Big Ten play, similar to what I've said about UConn and Big East play, I think you can fade UConn and Big East and Purdue and Big Ten because the conference familiarity, I think, gives opportunities where the scouting's so good. The opposing coaches know their stuff. There's good coaches in those leagues. You can fade those two, you know, quasi juggernauts, which is what they've looked like for much of non-con. So yeah, that's kind of how I'm attacking both those teams, kind of a similar vein there.
All right. Your plays for the day are.
I got a few. I'm the only person who seems to think Loyola Chicago. Maybe I'm biased living here in River North on the central with the Windy City. But I think Drew Valentine has something starting to brew here with the Blurs. They're hosting Richmond, the Itsy Bitsy Spiders, team that's been kind of a paper tiger for most of the year. They're banged up. I think Loyola picks them off tonight. So I laid the 2.5 and the 3 there with my hometown Blurs.
And your other two are?
And then I got Davidson up to 5.5, up to 6 for smaller. Rhode Island off that big win against St. Joe. Archie Miller, I think people think he's starting to turn around there. I'm not all the way convinced yet. I like Davidson in the better spot. And then my last one, I took San Jose State in the late night against San Diego State, but first half only. Tim Miles, great coach as a dog, but he's had issues closing out games. They don't have the depth. I think they come up with a pretty good game plan first half to thwart the Aztecs, who are down a little bit this year. I think the Aztecs prevail in the second half by margin, but I think the first half is the good window to target the Spartans and Timmy Miles.
Okay, so Loyola, Davidson, full game against the spread, yep. And then the Spartans of San Jose State first half for Matty Cox. Yes, thank you, Matty. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you, boys. Go College Hoops.
Matthew_Cox for all Matt's personal stuff. Lebatard, Dan Lebatard next on the DK Network. Kelly and I coming back at VSiN with the NFL, our power rankings, and playoff props next right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.